Alrighty, hello and welcome to North Shore Sports Night. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns and our producer and engineer Bill Proposky. Bill Newell in transit, working feverishly as he always does. He can do remote stuff. He can probably do it like Maverick, flying upside down in an F-18 Tomcat or whatever. Anyway, Tim is here. He didn't make it overseas, and Tim, I feel for you. I feel bad for you and your bride that you guys couldn't go overseas. But hopefully, better days are ahead.
Yeah, we're following up with the travel insurance claim, and you know, when we get that back, we'll book another one. So.
Yeah, well, that's it. You gotta, you know, roll with the punches, as my dad used to say. He used to say you gotta take the bitter with the sweet. I don't know what that means, but that's what he used to say. Tim, let me roll a couple of scores out here, and then we'll get to tonight's program. The early scores around, and this is pretty much the last week of regular season in high school spring sports, and boy, does spring sports fly by. In baseball, Lynn Classical won their 16th game so far this year, 16-2. They shut out Reading 5-0. In boys lacrosse, it was Pentucket 15 and Woburn 3. Girls lacrosse, Ipswich 12, Winchester 11. And Marblehead still having a tough time this year, North Reading 13-11. Over Marblehead, the Magicians come up just a little bit short. And good news out of Hamilton Wenham, Coach Joe Maher reports that the girls' tennis team, for the second year in a row, goes unbeaten in the Cape Ann League at 13-0. They're 16-1 overall as they shut out Triton 5-love. 5-0, 5-0, however you want to put it today. Hamilton Wenham wins five games. Triton doesn't win any, or matches, I should say. So anyway, congratulations to Hamilton Wenham Girls Tennis. They do it again in the Cape Ann League. And coming up tonight in just a little bit, we'll be talking with Colleen Newbury, who has migrated from Danvers over to St. Mary's, continues to do her amazing, magical job, with winning, as we'll talk with, Spartans coach about their win. And their winnings and the fact that they are rated number one in D3 over Triton. They're 16-1 and they play a familiar opponent tomorrow in Gloucester, and we will talk to Coach Newbury about that coming up. Tim, we're going to talk to Mike Grenier later about the Celtics' demise, or it may be premature, but they're certainly on life support. Later tonight, after this program, I'll be talking with NHL agent and Winthrop High School hockey coach Dale Dunbar about the NHL playoffs. I'm sure we'll talk about the Bruins, but Coach Dunbar has his eyes on the Stanley Cup playoffs, and he'll give us his view on that. And Coach, I think I'd like to start with you with the Red Sox. They're not completely setting the league on fire, but they're playing very competitively.
Yeah, I think it's to a lot of people's surprise. I think a lot of people, you know, myself included, you know, basically we go, you know, who the hell are these guys? There were several names you would have known from the past couple of years, but it looked like the bad news bears for a while at the beginning of the year. The guy that couldn't shoot straight, any appropriate Hollywood label you wanted to stick on them. The pitching staff was, who knew? You know, and all of a sudden they just started to right the ship. They started, you know, they were hitting home runs. That was the saving grace for them. They were just bludgeoning some teams. And looking at the 26-21, for a long time they were under 500, and they've clawed over. They, you know, they're five games over 500. They're 7.5 games behind Tampa Bay. But only two games behind the Yankees, who are ahead of them. And the whole thing is just consistency. You know, getting and they're getting long outings out of their pitching staff, which is really strange because they haven't really done that over the last few years. Let the starting pitchers stretch out. But over the last several weeks, so, you know, they've been getting 6+7 innings out of their starting pitchers, and that certainly works to save your bullpen, so they're fresher, they got livelier arms, and you can be a bit more situational with them because they have to pitch less innings. So, you know, it's a competitive division. you know, everybody is over 500 looking at the standings in the East. So it's going to be probably that way most of the season. So it's going to be, you know, who can maintain the momentum, who can get hot, who can stay on the streak. Tampa Bay is already 10 games over 500. And can you catch them? Can they hit a bump? Can you get hot when they get cold? And can you, you know, play with them and take them down when you go head-to-head to make that real jump in games?
Well, we saw the Yankees last year just run away from the pack, and then all of a sudden they hit the wall and pulled back within range. So, yeah, it's possible. But I think the one thing that jumps out at me, Tim, and I don't know what you might think about this, is the play of Connor Wong absolutely stuns me, because I saw him last year, and I'm saying, this guy's a catcher? I mean, you know, he looks like a high school shortstop. But, damn, he can throw. He's the pitchers trust him. He's hitting the ball. You know, he's calling a good game.
Yeah, several of their off-season pickups are playing really well. And again, it was part of that, you know, bad news biz. Who the hell did we get here? You know, who have we let go, and who did we pick up? You know, Masataka Yoshida, you know, is crushing the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And again, where did he come from? You know, but you know, he's playing. I'm not going to say playing above talent level, but he's certainly playing above people's expectations of him. And that's key, because you got Devin hitting down at 253, even though he's got 44 RBIs, he's still not hitting for average, which is what you really need for him to do as well.
We'll see how that turns out. And we talked about Jaron Duran last week, but yeah, Yoshida is a real pleasant surprise, and he's certainly playing bigger than his size. And, you know, overall, they've been fun to watch. Did you see the video on Joe Judge when he looked to the bench and then hit the home run?
No.
Oh, God, it was so funny. He's up there, and the camera's on him, and he's concentrating on the pitcher. And for a split second, he looks over to the bench. He didn't move his head. He just moved his eyes. And then he went right back to the pitcher, and then he hit almost a 500-foot home run. And the Toronto announcers are saying he's getting tipped off. They're telling what the pitches are. You don't have time to get a signal that quickly. And what he said was he was mad at his own players for chirping at the umpire. He wanted to concentrate, you know, on his at-bat. But it was funny as hell. And when you get a chance, you got to see it.
I will definitely check that out.
It's a beauty. Okay, let's see here. Red Sox play late tonight. Celtics play tomorrow. We're going to talk with Mike Grenier about that later on. He's our basketball insider. And as I said, I'll be talking later with our hockey insider, Dale Dunbar. We'll post that sometime tomorrow about the NHL playoffs. In the meantime, we will take our first break, and we'll come back and talk with St. Mary's softball coach, Colleen Newbery, a very familiar face here on the North Shore, especially in the Northeastern Conference, now coaching St. Mary's softball. And they are at 16-1 overall. I'm pretty sure I got to ask her about that, because I see two different records here. Anyway, we'll get back to that in just a minute. You are listening to North Shore Sports Night on MSO News Sports. Don't forget that we have the North Shore Sports Writers Weekly. It is the Salem News Sports Writers, actually. And then we have the North Shore Sports Desk on Thursday at 6. No, at about 8 a.m. is when it drops. And the North Shore Sports Desk, along with the Merrimack Valley Sports Desk with Dominic DeCastro and Nick Kukuru, that comes up on Thursday. So lots of local sports here on MSO News Sports. And, of course, if you check out the website, we have the latest on the St. John's Prep goings-on today with the squatting. And we have all the voices and all the sound. We have all the information from the state police, as well as from the St. John's Prep head of school. So check out our website for that information, if you don't mind. If you want to get a hold of us, it's msonewsports@gmail.com, msonewsports@gmail.com. So we'll be back. Be patient.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, we're back live now with St. Mary's High School softball coach Colleen Newbury. That's right. St. Mary's High School coach. And, Coach, welcome back to MSO. Last time we talked, you were at Danvers High School, and I must congratulate you on taking your great, fantastic program from one town and then going over across town back to Lynn. So congratulations. And I got to ask you, how does that feel, being able to establish two such great programs?
You caught me off guard with that one. It just so happens that the kids are talented, and they work well together. They just seem to gel and make it work.
I wasn't trying to catch you off guard, Colleen, because I respect so much the work you've done in the Northeastern Conference, and you know, when you were at Danvers High School. But the transition for you, you know, working with a small town school, and then going over to St. Mary's, where you have kids coming from all different towns and cities, and so on. And I know that you're familiar with that, but what is it, how does your coaching style fit into that? How do you adapt to that in taking all these kids from different communities and then, you know, getting them to work for one cause?
Mainly just establishing, good communication on the field. You know, always starts with defense and, you know, figuring out who's the best defensive nine we can put on the field at the same time and collectively communicate together. And that has been the way I've done it my whole career and, in Danvers and at St. Mary's. So, and that just, you know, seems to help us win every year. 'Cause if you can't get the pitcher off the field, you can't hit. So.
Okay. All right. Before Tim, checks in here, are you guys 15-1 or 16-1?
Currently 16-1.
That's what I thought. All right. Yeah. The Globe's got it off here. Okay. So it's a horse race between St. Mary's and Triton for the power rankings, and you guys, your team is up there at number one at the moment over Triton. Terrific North Shore teams, St. Mary's, Triton, Bishop Fenwick, Newburyport, Gloucester, tremendous competition.
Yes.
And I want to ask you about the expectations for your team coming into this season.
You know, the expectation's always high. I think it's high generally from the other teams at school that do really well, and I think the girls kind of jump on their wagon and they want to do well too because they see the recognition that they get, so they feel like they want to try to keep pace.
Mm-hmm.
We lost three big seniors last year coming into this season, so I think it was kind of like, how is this year going to go for us? And honestly, the now seniors have done a tremendous job just being good leaders, both in school and out of school, and, you know, really rallied the team to be where we're at right now.
Okay. Tim?
All right, Coach. Congratulations on a great season.
Thank you.
Was there any trepidation about making the move from Danvers to St. Mary's when you first took the job?
Well, there was back when I went to Danvers, when I was at St. Mary's before I went to Danvers. That was kind of tough. And then I honestly didn't plan on coaching again when I left Danvers. I planned on watching my daughter, who's now in sixth grade playing, just planned on doing that. And then St. Mary's didn't have a coach going into the first week of March last season. So, of course, going back to teach there, the kids would constantly come in my room and stare at me like, we don't have a coach. And I thought, well, I'm not free, so pick somebody else. I don't want to say I was kind of bullied into it by the kids, but maybe a little bit, you know. And then I
did it make you feel guilty, like, you know, you're just standing up here teaching when you could be coaching us?
Pretty much. That's pretty much it. So, you know, I didn't leave Danvers to go back to St. Mary's. I basically left Danvers to hopefully be done with coaching, and then it so rolled in that Coach Frank Pagluca could not coach the team last season, and it was a late decision, and then it just sort of happened. We had the family discussion, okay, can we do one more year? And okay, and now I'm doing another year. So
did you find kids in the back of the room kind of like coughing and in between the cough going, softball?
Yeah, it was more like that before and after school too, with the entourage that would walk by or come in, or I actually had someone pretending to turn a double play outside my door one day. That was kind of crazy. That's real. I mean, it all worked out. I know I love coaching. You know, the time commitment is what it is, and it's hard now to not always watch my daughter play, but it's okay.
You know, go ahead, Tim. I'm sorry.
St. Mary's over, you know, the last decade plus has had so much success across the board in sports. They're averaging a state title a year.
Yep.
One sport or another. How does it feel going back to St. Mary's to be part of that again?
It's pretty great. It's really fun because the kids love cheering each other on, and everyone, teachers alike, go to the games and, you know, support all the teams, and it's really fun. It's a really fun atmosphere.
And I predict that you're going to find a balance with your daughter and coaching at St. Mary's. It's all going to work out. I can pretty much see that in the crystal ball here.
Thank you.
I mean that sincerely. Tim and I have been around for many, many years coaching and teaching and talking to you people, you wonderful coaches around in the North Shore. And, you know, you put the kids first, and that is what is so important. And family notwithstanding, they understand. But when you got ball players in the family, it's going to be fine. I got to ask you about multi-sport athletes, because I see a couple of these on the roster. I know Coach Pagliuca coached a couple of them in hockey and so on. So tell me about some of your multi-sport athletes who are contributing this year.
Well, we have Angie Catino over at first base. She was the hockey goalie this past season, and they had a tremendous year. And who better to have at first base than your hockey goalie? I mean, it's pretty great. So she's a captain. She's doing a great job for us. Brooke Maloney, who played basketball for Jeff Newhall, is out in center field and also a captain as a sophomore, and she is a tremendous leader, a gifted athlete, speedy, all of it. It's good. It's great. You know, we also have some volleyball kids, some field hockey kids. We've got so many multi-sport athletes that play. It's great. I love that they play another sport, and we go and support them, of course, when they are playing their other sports, too. So it's really kind of a fun, you know, hate to quote the family atmosphere, but it really is.
You know, it's one of the advantages sometimes of a smaller school, where kids tend to be multi-sport athletes, and so they're in condition year-round. They tend not to get hurt as often as kids who play just one sport and stress one set of body muscles. And because they're shifting from sport to sport throughout the school year, I think that helps them maintain a focus, because they finish one and the mindset has to shift a little bit to the next sport, because your mindset is different, the strategies are different. So there's a lot more thinking going on, and your mind is able to diversify and adapt to different situations that much quicker.
You know what? You're right. My pitcher, I'm thinking about this, my pitcher, Anna Fringuelli, tremendous athlete, gifted cross-country runner. She did the high jump this winter, and, you know, now she's pitching, right? So, like, talk about three different facets of a sport, you know, from cross-country to high jumping to pitching. It does diversify them quite a bit, and, it also gives them great different groups of friends, which makes a difference, too. So you're constantly with the same group all the time. Which is also a nice thing.
I was just going to ask you about Anna. You guys, your team won the Catholic Central Championship the other day with Anna on the mound. Tell me a little bit about that game and what it meant to you and them.
Honestly, it probably meant the world to Anna. She's worked so hard. I mean, you know, she sat behind Lily Newhall, who was a tremendous athlete and pitcher for St. Mary's for a long time, and then went off to St. A's this year. And, you know, she just kind of sat, always did her work behind, you know, always did her work. And then now this year, you know, she's the main pitcher. And, you know, she struck out 15 in that game, which was a personal best by far for her. And it was just a tremendous game. She had great control, great spot of a drop curve that day. And it was really a great, performance by her. And, it's easy when the defense only has to make six plays. So.
True. There you go.
At the same time, you have a dominant pitcher like that. That's a real mental test for the kids behind her, because she's such a dominant pitcher, and it could be real easy just to roll back on those heels and not be set for a ground ball and a play to be made. But it's obviously credit to the kids and to you to keep them focused, to keep them up on the balls of their feet, anticipating, as my mentor told me decades ago, what am I going to do if the ball's hit to me? That's what you're always thinking.
Right,
in your
want the ball.
You're constantly looking around the field. Okay, what's the play? How many on? How many out? What do I do if the ball's hit to me? What do I do if the ball's hit to somebody else? And all that's constantly playing through your mind over and over again, every pitch.
Yeah, that's called hours of practice. and it's funny, we left the field and we do defense first and we do defense last and we hit the middle, so that's how that goes every day. To keep them ready, give them game situations, live time, game winning runs at second, what do you do? That kind of stuff. So, we do try to keep it as fresh as we can. I mean, Anna does average 8 strikeouts a game, so, that does make it a little bit easier, but, we've got to make the routine play when it comes, so.
Colleen, you've had some very close games, and I want to ask you in particular about Bishop Feehan, because they sort of took you to the woodshed there in the first game, and then you came back and squeezed it out 2-1 in the second. So tell me about that rivalry and what it means to the season, because you also had a very close game with Bishop Feehan.
We, over the course of time, I've learned since coming back to St. Mary's, that's been a little bit of a rival game, mm-hmm. where they'll beat us and we don't ever get to beat them again. So this year we ended up playing them twice again like we did last year. And the first time when they came to us, it just, oh boy, was not our day. Too many walks, too many errors. It just wasn't happening.
Mm-hmm.
And good for the kids. Like, they were excited to go try again, right? Like, let's go. We have to go there, which, it's a solid hour and half a bus ride or whatever down there. But, they get off the bus, they warmed up, they seemed confident, ready to go. And, Anna pitched really unbelievable that day for us, and the defense was tremendous, and what a difference a game can make.
What about Fenwick? You had two close games with Fenwick too.
Same thing. Their pitcher, tremendous. Gigi's a great pitcher, and spots the ball up, down, in and out, all that. And you've got to play defense, and then get a timely hit if you can.
That's important. Tim,
as you're looking to finish out the season, what are your messages to the kids on a daily basis to keep them focused, to end as strong as they can? And tournament time is coming, and there's still a season to play.
Right. Basically, the message is eat well and get some sleep. That's pretty much where we're at. And again, we end practice the same way every time. We end on the defensive note. And, all right, this is what we got tomorrow, and let's go get them and start the day. But honestly, it's a lot of eat well and sleep, especially with graduation coming. Right, the focus is a little different. We got our senior game tomorrow night, so it's a fun time of year, but it can also mess with the focus a little. So.
Yeah, that's a delicate balance. And before we talk about the Gloucester game, because I know that you are very familiar with Gloucester, you and have had some rivalries over the year. Please tell me a little bit more about some of your players.
Yeah, so the seniors are Riley Zukas in right field, and Anna Fringuelli on the mound, and Angie Catino at first. All three are tremendous, gifted players. Riley Zukas plays right field for her arm. You would never know it by looking at her, but solid in right field. Ashanti Pardilla is at third. She's the rock of that infield. She's the talking one from the dugout, from the field to everyone, making sure everyone knows what's happening. Michaela Walker's at second as a junior, and just so happens to play with all the Gloucester girls in the summer, so that's always fun. Eliza Crean Oviedo is an eighth grader. She's starting for us at short lately. She's doing a great job. And Lori Serial is out in left field. And it's only her third year playing softball. She's a tremendous, tremendous athlete. She actually went to the Nationals and shot put over the winter.
Wow.
She's done great. And don't let me forget Miss Roma Braid back behind home plate. It's her third year back there as a sophomore, and she's one of the best around doing her job. She's amazing.
Well, before I turn it back to Tim, that's pretty scary. You still got a lot of youth on that team, so that's scary for everybody else. Okay. Tim, some final thoughts for Coach?
Well, I got as far as the heading towards the playoffs. So, who's up for this week's opponents, Colleen?
We have Gloucester tomorrow, and then we play in the Holland tournament over the weekend, which is Swampscott, Lynn Classical, and Lynn English. And I didn't really get the matchup yet, so I'm not sure exactly who we're playing first. It's a home game for us tomorrow, yes. It's our senior game at 4:30.
And where do you play? Where are your home games?
I'm at Breed Junior High in Lynn.
Okay, yeah. Well, I grew up in West Lynn, so it's like right around the corner from me, from where I grew up.
Coach, great to hear your voice again. So glad you're still doing it. It's really cool. And I guess as a former Gloucester High School teacher, I'm glad you're out of the Northeastern Conference. So, but we wish you all the well and hope we can chat with you during the tournament.
Sure. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Colleen. We appreciate it. Take care.
All right. You're welcome. You too. Thank you.
All right. That is Colleen Newberry, who is the softball coach at St. Mary's High School. And just I was reading in the Globe today, in the Salem News today, Tim. At Danvers, she never won fewer than 14 games.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Thanks, Rick, for throwing that statistic out there.
Isn't that something? Never won fewer than 14 games at Danvers High School, and she was there for quite a while. She does have one daughter, I believe, playing on the team this year, and, of course, she's got a sixth grader coming up. So the Catholic, Central Catholic is on notice.
She sounds so young.
Yeah. She is.
She sounds like she should be like a first or second year coach right out of college.
Now she's a Hall of Famer for sure. My goodness gracious. Fabulous season for St. Mary's. They are 16-1. They've got Gloucester. They also have at Holyoke, it says here on my schedule, and Lynn English to finish out the season. But the important thing is that in D3 at the moment, in the power rankings, they are number one in all of D3. And right behind them is Triton at number two. We'll take a break and come back with our basketball insider, Mike Renier. You're listening to MSO News Sports. And this is North Shore Sports Night at MSO News Sports. Had to get that out. We'll be right back.
The North Shore is listening to MSONewsSports.com and our great selection of podcasts.
Hi, this is Phil Stacey, Executive Sports Writer at the Salem News. Make sure to listen to our podcast every week with the sports writers from the Salem News, including Matt Williams, Nick Giannino, and myself.
MSO News Sports, connecting you to the North Shore.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, we are back now with Mike Renier, a basketball insider. Tim Kearns, of course, is with us. And I'm Rick Moore. Bill Newell working feverishly, as he always does, for stuff that you will read about tomorrow and listen in and watch and so on. Mike, I'm gonna kind of sit back on this one and listen to you two because I don't have a lot I don't have a lot of positive to say. And I want to say this and see what you guys think about it. I have three things, that come to my mind as, an average fan. I don't know really anything about basketball, but.
Oh, yeah, yes, you do. Yeah.
Well, see, but, from this point of view, it looks to me as though the three things that stand out in their three losses to Celtics, three losses to Miami.
Yep.
One, they don't have a game plan. Two,
right.
There's no bench play. The
yep.
bench doesn't even get off the bench. Yep. And three, the unforced turnovers are awful.
Right. Tim, you could chip in on this. I agree with Rick on all 3 points. Regarding a game plan, I think it's become obvious. And I went to the first two games at the Garden, Rick, and I'm glad you brought up that point about game plan, because seeing it on TV is one thing, but seeing it live when the plays are developing is quite another thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I could see the way that even the unheralded Miami Heat players played, that there was a great plan behind it. What I'm saying by that is when the Miami Heat were on offense, you could see all the picking, the screening, the cutting, the open jump shots, because Spoelstra had a master plan of how to attack the Celtics defense. Conversely, the Celtics offense could do nothing against the Miami Heat zone. They just zoned them out, and the Celtics didn't know how to attack it. So you talk about a lack of game plan. I think you're right. I think Mazzulla, who's now trying to take the blame for at least the last night's loss, the game three loss by 26 points, he didn't have a plan, or at least he certainly didn't have a plan that was anywhere near as effective as Eric Spoelstra, who, of course, is basically regarded as the best coach in basketball. So that's part one. Well, I know one of the points also, too, Rick, is the lack of bench play. You know, you saw Peyton Pritchard come in unexpectedly and played 11 minutes in one of the games, and you never thought he'd be the guy to get off the bench. And then all of a sudden, they put him back aside, and they brought back Grant Williams. And the only thing he did was anger Jimmy Butler with that ridiculously stupid headbutting thing, because he hit a three-pointer. Grant Williams hit a three-pointer, and he was acting macho all of a sudden, and suddenly was challenging Jimmy Butler. And it was like probably the dumbest move you could make, because Butler caught fire after that, and they put away the Celtics at the Boston Garden. So that's two of the 3 points. What was the other one, Rick?
Unforced turnovers, especially Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown.
Oh, yeah, no question. The unforced turnovers. I'm so sick of seeing Jaylen Brown, who could command a $295 million Supermax contract after this. I'm so tired of him going one-on-three, one-on-four, trying to do it all by himself and dribbling the ball off his leg. He's playing right into the way Miami wants him to play, and Jason Tatum is just a step below that. He's not going one-on-three or one-on-four, but he's still isolating way too much, not involving his teammates. And I know he came out of a timeout in one of the games at the Garden, and he committed an immediate turnover, an unforced error. And it's just an all-around disaster. Tim, it's your turn.
Hey, how about them Denver Nuggets, man?
Yeah.
I've been waiting. I've been roaring, revving up to give the Denver its due. 3-0 against the Lakers. I love it.
Well, you know, Rick and Tim, how about this, right? Teams that are down 3-0. 0-149 in the history of the league, 0-149 in overcoming a 3-0 lead. In other words, it's never been done, and the teams that have been behind 3-0 have lost 149 consecutive series. So therefore, it doesn't look good for the Lakers against the Denver Nuggets, and it certainly doesn't look good for the Celtics against the Miami Heat.
No, you wonder where all the mojo that the Celts had during the regular season. And yeah, they had their occasional blips, and we beat them up for those blips. But the way that they played, they played fast and furious, but it was organized chaos, running, getting down, getting open, hitting the open man, cutting to the basket, scrapping for rebounds, and yet all that has mysteriously disappeared.
Right.
It's nowhere to be seen. This, like, Victor, there's no game. There's no organization on the court. Like, everybody suddenly forgot where they're supposed to be going. Oh, wait, there's a shot. Oh, I'm not going to go to the hoop to get a rebound. I'm going to hang out here. And the two times I turned it on last night, Tatum ran himself into a turnover, and then Brown comes running down the court, dribbling like a madman, trips himself, loses the ball. Ball goes the other way for an easy layup, and it's like, come on, guys, what are you doing? You know, they're playing in such a panic mode.
Right.
There can be organization.
And that shouldn't be the case, right, Tim and Rick? Because now I'm not buying the young puppies anymore. Tatum's been in the league 25 years old, but he's been in the league 6 years. Jaylen Brown is, 26 or 27 years old, been in the league 7 years. By that point in their careers, Larry Bird had already won a couple of titles, and Kevin McHale had already won a couple of titles in 1981 and 84. So I'm not buying the young age as an excuse anymore, because in terms of NBA experience, 6 years for Tatum, 7 years for Brown, that's enough experience where you should know what you're doing in the playoffs.
You know, guys, Mike, I think I texted this to you. At this point now, in retrospect and looking back with 2020 hindsight, as they say, last year was so much more fun than this year.
Yep.
Unless this team pulls a Red Sox, an 04 Red Sox, which I don't think they have any chance. And by the way, as an aside, I was watching a certain television channel tonight on sports, and the sports director actually asked Missoula, have you reached out to any of the 04 Red Sox? And I thought, that is, why are you, you're the sports director in this station, in this city? Do you know nothing? OMG. But back to the point, they were more fun to watch last year, and I think it was because there was so much more teamwork and their defense was so smothering and they had a chance.
Right.
They played themselves out of chances this year, and I'm done. I don't know what to say.
Right. I agree, Rick. And of course, and Al Horford was, here's, Tim, I want to ask you and Rick about this, because I thought of this in seeing that debacle last night and falling down 0-3, is the post-game comments by the Celtics were so casual and cavalier, as if they were up 3-0. And they talked in general terms about, oh, we got to be better and all that. Where is the outrage of being down 3-0? When the Larry Bird teams got down in the series, we all specifically remember Larry Bird calling out himself and his teammates, we're a bunch of sissies. We're a bunch of sissies against the Lakers. And then they responded with stinging play. I mean, they literally regrouped and played very physical against the Lakers and won that series in 1984. And they won it all, the whole thing. That was the finals. And you don't see any of that outrage from this current crop of Celtics who just don't seem to care. Al Horford is the only one who said last night after the game, after the Game 3 loss, was that great defense, that defense we had been playing, is for some reason it's lost and we need to regain. He's the only one that came close to calling out himself and his teammates for the lack of defensive intensity. And the whole casual response that the Celtics players have is just astonishing to me for a team that's down 0-3. Now I hate analytics, Tim and Rick, and of course ESPN analytics said the Miami Heat had a 3% chance of winning this series. And I thought that was ridiculous to even begin with, because just on coaching alone, I thought the Miami Heat had a 50-50 chance. So much for analytics, because now I think the Miami Heat have a 99.9% chance of winning this series.
Yeah, like I agree to it. I hate analytics, you know. We grew up in an age where, you know, it was, what did your gut tell you? And you played with your heart, and you played with your head, and your head was thinking about what do I have to do to win? How do I make this play? What's coming up? It wasn't, okay, what are the numbers tell me I should do? We didn't have cards in our caps or on our wrists or in our back pocket to go, okay, well, this guy tends to hit to right center field. No, okay, I was smart enough, but I was taught well enough. You know who your pitcher is. You know where he likes to throw the ball. What, you got a right-handed or left-handed pitcher. So you're taking a step or two here, a step or two to the right, a step or two to the left, a couple of steps back, you know, and you're anticipating these things. There's no anticipating anymore because it's all spelled out on a card. Go 2 steps to your left. Well, okay. It's like, give me a break. I hate when I see a guy tap in the outfield and look and see, okay. And then guy reaches into the back pants. Analytics is killing. It's killing every sport. And we're killing. Anyway, you talk about the 84 series. Remember what Kevin McHale did to Kurt Rambis?
Of course.
After
the clothesline.
After Lex called him out?
Yep, absolutely.
Clothesline.
Yeah, he clotheslined him, and it caused a near riot at the L.A. Forum. I was there, okay? It caused a near riot at the L.A. Forum. But Celtics team is incapable of playing that with that sort of intensity or anger, even. You want to see them get ticked off. They don't get ticked off. They lose by 6 and 8 and 10 points at home after having big leads in the couple of games at the Garden. And then no one gets upset about it. It's, we got to move on to the next game. And then they lose by 26, 25, 26 last night. And there's even less of a anger or in, there's no intensity and there's no feeling of retribution or coming back strong in the next game. It's like they don't care. And that's the most frustrating part of the entire team. And, you know, you can't call, at this stage of his career, Tatum is the face of the franchise and the alleged leader of this team. But I think he'd rather be a follower than a leader, and he likes to display his talents, but I think he'd rather be a follower than a leader. He's definitely not a leader, because he still gets totally upset with the officials for calls and phantom calls and non-calls, and he spends more time glaring at officials than he does getting back on defense. So he's definitely got holes in his game, as great as he thinks he is, and he's supposedly top. How can a team with a top five player voted as a top five player like Tatum, and of course, you know, the other guy, Jaylen Brown, voted in the top 10, second team All NBA. Two guys in the top 10 in the entire NBA come from the Boston Celtics, and yet they're down 3-0 against the Miami Heat, whose only, you know, player in that All Star group in the NBA is Jimmy Butler. It's amazing to me. So I've seen the Miami Heat. You would have to admire the way they play. Guys that we've never, most fans have never heard of, Caleb Martin, Gabe Vincent, you know, Adebayo, been playing great at center, just ferocious on the glass, and then led by Butler, who is a true leader, by the way. And, you know, all that stuff is playing into this series because the Miami Heat know how to play as a team. They have a leader in Butler. They have a great coach at Spoelstra. And the Celtics are countering with basically just nothing. I mean, they're just countering with absolute, you know, false hustle, and they just cannot, you know, get into a set offense, and they can't find the open man. And defensively, they just give up isolation plays to Jimmy Butler. When they clear out the floor on one side and give Butler the ball, he operates against, you know, a clueless Grant Williams or anybody else and gets whatever shot he wants. And that's all about being organized, Tim. What you, Rick and Tim, like the stuff you point out, it's about being organized, being hungry, and all that stuff. I see that in the entire approach by the Miami Heat, and none of it in the approach by the Boston Celtics.
I also
they stole the Celtics playbook and of how to attack a team, and the Celtics are still trying to find the playbook. They're looking for it, but they haven't found it yet, and they haven't realized Miami's got it over on their bench.
That's right. That's right. I mean, I'm so impressed with Miami. I mean, look at this now. Jason Tatum is shooting 25% from three-point land in this series. And the other guy, Jaylen Brown, is shooting 10%. 10%. That stuff is killing them. Whereas Miami has 6 or 7 players in double figures for this three-game series. And guys that normally are not mentioned as any, like, being extraordinary players. Caleb Martin had 25 in one game. Gabe Vincent, a guy that most people in the NBA who watch the NBA really don't know that much about. He was 11 for 14 last night, 6 for 9 on threes, and he destroyed the Celtics. He outscored Brown and Tatum combined with 29 points, Brown and Tatum combined for 26. It just, no matter which way you look, offensively, defensively, it's been a train wreck for the Celtics.
Is there a point?
You can't have your two stars. You know, Tatum goes 1 for 7, Brown goes 0 for 7 on 3-point shots.
Right.
The guys that are supposed to be carrying you just basically threw everybody to the floor.
Yep. And Rick, you were going to say
something. Well, I just think, is there a point at which a coach might say, JT, sit down for a minute. Sam, go on in and shoot some threes. Or, you know, JB, sit down for a minute. Peyton, go in and shoot some threes. I mean, that's very naive on my part, but it worked during the regular season, and they haven't done anything in the playoffs.
Right, and they've abandoned the bench, Rick. Like you said, they've really abandoned the bench, except they've used, you know, Peyton Pritchard sparingly, and they've used Hauser for a couple of minutes here and there. And, you know, Grant Williams suddenly became a big man trying to defend. You know, they happen to be the hot shot defender against Jimmy Butler, and he got under Butler's skin, and Butler responded with a championship level play, whereas, you know, Grant Williams disappeared.
Yeah, you know, a lot has been made too of Missoula's lack of ability to call a proper timeout to stop the bleeding, as they say.
Especially Rick. Yeah, you're right, Tim. Matter of fact, subsequent to our conversation a week ago tonight, you know, at the Garden, Miami Heat scored 46 points in the quarter, third quarter, 46 points in one quarter, and Missoula did not call a single timeout. In all my years, and I go back to 1972, 73, I've never seen a coach absorb a run like that, 46 points in a quarter, and not call a single timeout. The only timeouts came from the TV timeouts. And Spoelstra's going, hey, this is going so well, I don't need to call timeouts. Missoula's not calling. I mean, here we are scoring 46 points in a quarter.
Well, let's turn our attention to the other series. I know Tim is happy that Denver is going so well, and I was very surprised by the run that the Lakers had in the playoffs. And how do you look at that conference?
Well, I agree with Tim. I love the way Denver plays. I think, Rick, if you had all the tapes of all the Monday night conversations we've had, I've been touting Denver as the number one team in the West all season long. And I love their talent level, and I also love their commitment on both offense and defense. And I have a real coach in Mike Malone, who's like Spoelstra, has done a great job with that team. Jokic he is really the center's version of Larry Bird. By that I mean he's such a great passer, but he doesn't do it from the forward position. Obviously, he does it from the center's position, so a lot of times his back is to the basket. But he knows how to make every clever pass inside, outside, and he gets rid of the ball very quickly. And he's a walking triple-double. One game in the series, he had 21 rebounds, 7 on the offensive glass, which is really hard to do these days, 7 offensive rebounds out of the 21. He had like 34 points, 21 rebounds, and 12 assists in one game. Jamal Murray, he had 40 points in one game. He had a 23-point quarter. Then the first quarter of the next game in L.A., he gets 17 points in the first quarter. And then they have Porter Jr., who's the great three-point shooter. They have Bruce Brown, who, by the way, played a year at Wakefield High School. He's from Boston area. And he scored. He comes off the bench as sort of a Sam Hauser type, but he gets the minutes. But he's a sixth man, and he gets you, or a Brogdon type, I guess we could say. He goes out there and gets you 15, 16 points off the bench. So they have the formula similar to the Miami Heat, and they certainly belong in the finals. And, you know, obviously, if they could beat the Lakers tonight in L.A., it'll be 4-0 there.
Yeah, Mike, you're talking about Jokic. He's the season leader for Denver. Points per game, almost 25. Rebounds, almost basically 12. Assists, basically 10. So he's a triple-double all season long.
Yep.
And but he basically doubles the Lakers' leader in points, rebounds, and assists. And when he leads Denver in all three, there are three different guys doing it for L.A. But again, at half of the rate that he's doing it.
He's an extraordinary player. I mean, obviously, Embiid, you could have made a case for Embiid being MVP, which he became, or this guy, Jokic, would have been the third year in a row as the MVP. So he's a two-time MVP for a reason, and he's showing those MVP credentials on the biggest stage of all now in the Western Conference Finals. And obviously, I see them making the final against the Miami Heat. They're a really outstanding team that a lot of people don't talk about, right, Rick? They're just a really good all-around team playing out there in Denver, which is not the biggest market for NBA attention on a national scope. And they just do it. They just play really well together, like the Miami Heat. I mean, that's a pick'em series when they play the Miami Heat in the finals. Obviously, we're assuming something here that neither L.A. or Boston will come back. But I guess the Miami Heat, Denver, it's almost like a 50-50 deal because you get two outstanding all-around teams led by very good coaches.
Who gets the home advantage?
It would be Denver because they had a much better regular season record than Miami. And, of course, Miami was the number 8 seed. Barely got into the playoffs, as we know, right, Rick? Because they had to beat they lost the Atlanta Hawks in the play-in game. And then they had a chance in another play-in game, and they won that one. That's how they wound up as the number 8 seed. So in terms of overall record, well behind Denver, and it'll be the underdog, I guess, on paper, in theory. And it'll have they would have to have Denver will have the home court advantage.
Is it a 2-2-1-1-1 format?
No, I am not even sure. I haven't looked that far ahead. I, I have until June 1st, though, because say these two series wrap up tomorrow, May 23rd. They don't play again until it's etched in stone. They don't begin the series like next Friday or Sunday. It wouldn't begin until a week from Thursday, June 1st. I'm not quite sure why the NBA is doing that, because the interest will, I think, dissipate if both teams have 8 or 9 days off.
Let me ask you both a question. Tim, I want to start with you. The games that you've watched, what's your critique of the announcers?
Oh, oh God, it's awful. Awful. You know, bring back Brent Musburger. You know, because they are, you can't listen to them. They're just awful.
Yep.
You know, you wonder what pile of talent they pulled these guys from. And it's not just, you know, one term announcer. It's everybody you listen to. They're just awful. You know, I listened to the hockey game. They got Sean McDonough doing the hockey. Sean is one of the best announcers across the board for sport.
Yep.
He's knowledgeable.
Agreed.
He puts emotion into it. But he's right down the middle of the road. He doesn't favor one team or the other. Even when, you know, he was covering the Bruins. I mean, you'd been hard-pressed to think, geez, he's a Boston guy. Why isn't he more up for Boston? But he just called it just so well. You know?
Yep,
and,
I agree. Yep.
Oh, these guys, they put you to sleep. You want to turn the station because of the announcers.
Yeah, I agree with that, Tim. Although I think the TNT announcers, which is what the Celtics-Miami Heat series is on, somewhat better than that crew on ESPN with Jeff Van Gundy and Mark Jackson and Breen. And, of course, then you have Stephen A. Smith in the pregame. And I have a hard time stomaching that whole crew.
You know, let me ask you both, why is it that we feel that way? I feel the same way. I watch these talking heads, starting with Stephen A. Smith, but also Barkley and even Shaq and all those guys. And on the NFL, when they have the talking heads an hour before the game. And to me, I don't understand the appeal. It's got to be my age, because I always liked watching the game.
Right.
That's why I watch sports, is to watch the game. I'm not interested in their opinion. And most of them don't analyze. They just opinionate. Opine.
Right, and I think, and Tim, I guess we'd have to, the reason they do that, obviously, Rick, is because they have to have a half hour or an hour pregame show, and they have to fill the airtime, so you're hearing all kinds of crazy stuff. So, you know, it's just a matter of filling airtime and trying to build an audience, I guess, before the game even starts.
Yeah, and I saw today that Shaq and Barkley almost got in a fight. I guess it was like during last night's broadcast. It's like, what is going on? You know, who really? What? You don't get enough airtime. You're going to start picking fights with each other.
Well, Shaq, he's always mumbling. I don't comprehend much of what he says.
He's the Marlon Brando of announcers, I guess, right?
Yes, I guess he is, right? You know.
Well, the thing of it is, what they do is it's to make money. They sell it to get the advertising in there, and people watch it, though. That's what I'm surprised at, and my wife gets angry with me when I turn off the sound. I said, because first, you know, and she doesn't understand. I just want to watch the game, and I want an announcer to tell me something I don't know about the game. That's what I look for.
Well, Rick, in York, there isn't much you don't know.
Well, there's a lot I don't know.
Right. I'll tell you an amusing story about it. When I was at the Garden for Game 2, Jeff Van Gundy's brother Stan, who also does a lot of the games on national TV, was there. And Stan Van Gundy, we went down the elevator. Oh, by the way, guys, get this. I went down the elevator after Game 2 with the rap artist Ludacris. Okay? It's just myself and two or three other people, and Ludacris. And when they showed him on the big screen during the game, 18,000 people went crazy. And I'm thinking, who is that guy? I have no idea who he was. And then I was on the elevator with him, and when he got off the elevator, people were just clamoring for his autograph and everything. And he seemed like a nice enough guy, and I probably could have got a selfie with him or something. But I had no – it's generation gap, Rick. I didn't know who Ludacris was.
Yep, it is. It is definitely generation for me, and it's and when I say what I want an announcer to tell me what I don't know, I mean I don't need the announcer to tell me you know, something about the guys, how he came dressed before the game.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I don't need all that crap. Just tell me, okay, well, how do you make that play? That was pretty cool.
Right. And if you watch the Miami Heat, Rick, they could lend a lot of insight because they play such a precise, organized style of play, and the way the Spoelstra calls the plays out of timeout, it was a beauty to behold. Actually, even though I'm pulling for the Celtics, obviously, but the way they ran their offense and defense at the Boston Garden was sensational, and that's why they went up 2-0. I mean, he was just put on a clinic in terms of having his team organized, and it really was beautiful the way they set picks and got people open, and it was a tremendous performance by Spoelstra and the Heat, and I don't think that's talked about enough because everyone's talking about the Celtics' shortcomings. But on the flip side of that is that Miami has been able to take advantage of the Celtics' shortcomings because they have a great coach.
Yeah, you know, and it comes from the understanding of the players of what he's telling them, what he wants them to do, and then going out and executing it. And
right.
It seems like the Celtics come into a timeout, and is anybody paying attention? And when they walk back out there, does anybody have an idea of what he just said to them?
And Rick, and Tim, you know, on top of that thought, how many times have we seen them come out of timeout in this series, and also in the Philadelphia series, and they come out of a timeout, the Celtics do, and they create a turnover right away.
Yep.
It's like been astonishing the number of turnovers that they've made, they've committed after a timeout. I'm just so stunned by that type of play coming out of a 2 or 3 minute timeout.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's been insightful listening to you two guys go at it, and I'm not hearing any advice from you two to the front office of the Celtics, so, I mean, what can they do? Well,
I'll leave you with this one. Let me ask you this one, Rick and Tim. Jaylen Brown, who's obviously had a very poor series and has basically had a poor playoff series, is eligible for a supermax contract of $295 million for 5 years. Would you give it to him?
me or Tim?
Both of you.
No.
Okay.
All right, and let's make that three, then. I say no.
I think that's why he's on the trading block.
Yeah, I think Brad Stevens will have some really hard decisions to make in the offseason. One with Missoula, that should be an easy one. And I think that the biggest one will be, what do you do with Jaylen Brown, who, quote, has been an all-star player, but do you really want to put your trust in that guy for 5 years, $295 million? I think they can go another direction and get a player that would be as good or maybe better in the long run and not have to pay out $295 million for 5 years.
All right, we'll continue this next week. No, next week's a holiday, right?
Correct.
All right, so in a couple of weeks we'll continue this and we'll be looking back on something. So we'll see.
That's right.
All right, Mike, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Tim and Rick, you guys have a great holiday weekend.
Amen. Same to you, brother. Thank you. Bye-bye. That's Mike Grenier, who is our basketball insider. And Tim, we're off next week, so we'll be back in a couple. And then we'll see where the Red Sox are and where the Bruins, where the Celtics might be or have been or were. No, I wouldn't. Would there be anybody? I mean, would you? $295 million? Holy rollies. Nope. Mm-mm.
No.
Nope. Don't see it. We pay enough. Well, I don't pay anything because I don't go to the games. But families pay enough to go to those games, so that's my 2 cents worth. Anyway, Coach, it's been fun. Try to heal and not get hurt or get sick or anything like that between now and 2 weeks.
For the time being.
Okay. All right, Coach. Be well. Thank you so much, and say hi to your bride and.
All right, well, Rick, and hi to yours as well.
Thank you. We'll talk in a couple of weeks. Thanks, Coach.
All right.
That's Tim Kearns, who is our super analyst here on MSO2 Sports and our ambassador of goodwill. And so we appreciate Tim and Mike and Bill and you. So thank you for being with us. Tell people about us, msonewsports@gmail.com. msonewsports@gmail.com is how you get a hold of us. On behalf of Bill Newell, Bill Proposky, Tim Kearns, I'm Rick Moore. Thank you for joining us. Be well and do the right thing.